west to the C2, C3 building. So she's better at it.
That one's green.
So this is now kind of the new version of the Sports Village. If you recall, back in the early days, back in 2016, this was a huge building. While we would have loved to build that, the way that the landfill, the limits of waste, it didn't work. But this still is about a $20 million, somewhere between $17 and $20 million tax value to the city. In the S3 component, so that is 72,000 square feet of turf, and that will be the home of a baseball academy, SC Waukesha, which has over 2,000 soccer kids playing in it. The Milwaukee Way will be training there, and this thing will on the weekends then flip to tournament venue. So this thing actually is it's going to be pretty easy to sort of sell that turf space out. And then on the C2 building, that is it's a newer concept. It's part of and I can't talk about the name, but I did introduce Callie and the mayor to the people behind this. This is part of this will be the sixth center in the United States that is it's very innovative. It's trying to sort of thread the needle between performance, wellness, and kind of old healthcare. You know, moving away from sort of fee for service to accountable care. So it's this mix of traditional sort of medical organizations. One of which we already know is coming in, which is Midwest Orthopedic, but there will be others. And then we will sort of thread the needle on fitness, more retail fitness components, all in the C2 component, which is three stories.
And S3 is indoor soccer.
It's baseball, soccer, lacrosse, football. It's as big as a soccer field, but it's really tended to be multi-sport. But soccer is a big piece of it.
But it's indoor.
It's indoor, all indoor, right? And it's one of a kind. Also, the people that will be taking a anchor spot, they do NFL combine training all over the United States. So this is going to be one of their center of excellence. And again, we're going to start announcing this, but the plan is to break ground. This is the money set up. We got the partners. We'll announce it soon, but we're going to hope to be in ground in June on that. And just to back up to the C1 building, the tenant improvements, the build-outs are being done. So we're hoping for a June 1st. The schedule calls for now my offices to be in, and also for Wheeland Sprock to open like June 1st or late May. So then we'll go north, which is a cluster of buildings. It's actually three buildings: S2, C3, C4. This two is it's a joint venture between my group and a very well known hospitality group, and. Part of the plan here is to do a number of these in the Midwest area, and this will be the kind of the anchor. But it's a golf entertainment business, so people that are familiar with Topgolf, it's essentially like that with better technology. But it's also branded and will feel like it's got separate restaurants. So it's actually got, in addition to the golf entity, it will have a pizza parlor. It'll have a concept called Hinterhof, which is sort of like a four-season beer garden. And then it's got another restaurant. I think we've been most likely it's going to be a taco tequila, but this will be coming out in terms of formal announcements very quickly, probably in the next 30 to 45 days. But again, we're shooting for a June build-out on that as well. So that is all phase one. What's phase two is across the street, R1 and M1. And then if we go east, that's a brew pub. And we've talked to, I've got really interesting conversations going on with three different brew pubs. Callie and I just had a great conversation with somebody she introduced us to a couple weeks ago. And then far east corner is a hotel. I've gotten multiple offers on a hotel. My original plan was to wait a little bit, but given the fact that we're a bit behind in the TID, I'm encouraged to try to start that a little earlier.
Yes,
right, Mayor.
Absolutely.
So, that is, and I would say all of these, by the way, are GMP contracts, right? So, just wanted to mention that. One of the questions that Grant asked—it's the only question I wrote down—but he asked if I was passionate about it. Absolutely. Completely passionate about it. And then there are more comments, but Grant, I'm happy to answer any questions later. And then, the job creation component. So the illustration that was given was all of these great developments and how much contribution people are putting into to these cities. So when you look at how much people like, you know, Mendel and these other groups or myself that have put into this, this is well over $200 million worth of development. And yes, there's, you know, it's in a TID district. Yes, there is city assistance. It's well over $160 million of outside financing that's coming into our city. In terms of job creation, we need to update those numbers, but it's, you know, it's significant. The notion of interns and the notion of host families has always been part of our plan. So if that seems like new news, I apologize, but host families is just part of the fabric of independent baseball. It's actually a really neat thing for the community. And then interns, we sports and entertainment is, you know, we're integrated with a lot of schools and a lot of kids come want to work for us. We have to pay interns, not a lot, but the new rules are going to pay them. But it's not significant in terms of the number of FTEs. We'll just on the Milkman business alone, we'll employ well over 100, people from concessionaires to, you know, the mascot to broadcast team to people doing the video, servers, retail, hawkers. So we had a job fair tonight, and I think like 60 people showed up. So
we talked about jobs. It's important to note that financing on this does not depend on jobs, but it depends on property value, the assessed value. So there could be a million jobs here. That doesn't help us get the revenue to pay off the bonds. The property value does that. So it's great to have the employees. At the end of the day, we need property value, not employees, even though we need employees. Because we don't get income tax. So it doesn't help us pay down.
Yeah, but it's an important point. I've been talking about jobs. Like the Lux Golf is well over 200 employees, and one of the you hosted a conference. What was it, Friday morning on workforce development? And that's one of our big concerns is where we're going to find all these people. So I guess I'll just turn it over to you guys for any questions that you may have.
Alderman Mayor. First of all, thank you guys very much for coming here tonight.
Sure.
This communication is extremely important. Mayor, a question for you. Do we expect the energy report to come in?
They're finishing it now. I hesitate to give you an exact date because if something else comes up, I want to be able to respond to it and have that data within but soon. I hate to be evasive, but I've got to keep my options open.
And then just one friendly request. I don't know if you've been receiving phone calls too. Once this was put on the agenda, we got questions. Are you going to vote on something tonight? Is it possible to put on the agenda no action to be taken or no votes to be taken?
Sure.
Maybe related action item following or no related action tonight or something?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Alderman Barber.
I think it's important to keep this as an ongoing, and I think you mentioned that this is going to be a flip segment in every meeting from now on so that you can hear what the audience has to say, the taxpayers have to say, gives you a chance to work that into your presentations as you see fit. But I'm glad this is going to be ongoing, and I really appreciate that.
And a reminder that we all use our microphones better. Alderwoman Miller.
Thanks, I appreciate the update. One thing that's just as important to me is not just what is going to come, but what has been done so far. As far as where are we at with the stormwater basin, where are we at with the roads, all the water and sewer. Could you give us an update on that?
Yeah, and I have to apologize. I invited Greg. I said we wanted you to do a piece of the presentation. I forgot about you, Greg. So, Greg, you're up.
Mr. Marshall's coming up. I want to thank all of you, except for the three that left, for sticking through this. Getting the information directly from the developer is important, so you get facts rather than my cousin's brother's aunt told me stuff. So it's important, and I appreciate you all sticking through it. I know our captive audience, I know there's a couple of different audiences here, but thank you. Mr. Marshall.
Yes, I'm Greg Marshall. Can you guys hear me? All right, 8820 South 68th Street, wonderful city of Franklin. I'm sorry, Alderman, what was your question for Smith?
Update on infrastructure.
What infrastructure is complete, what's yet to be done, what status of the stormwater basins, the pipes, the water, sewer, roads, how far along are we?
Certainly. So we'll start with the storm sewer. We're at about 95% complete with all the public storm sewer has been installed right now. There's two major retention ponds on the property, one on the far south that's almost complete at this point in time. A little bit of topsoil and a little bit of plantings and stuff to do on that one yet. The north pond, which is just off the screen on the upper side, is about is about 30% complete, and we're probably within a month of having that one 100%. Then all our stormwater will be functional for the entire project. And at that point, we'll start to fill in some of the temporary stormwater basins and stuff we have out there. The sanitary sewer, or I'm going to say we're at 98% complete for all the public sanitary sewer on the north and south side of the street. Again, north or south of Rawson, as I referenced that one. The water, we're at about 90% complete with all the public water that's going in. We need to make a connection yet from underneath Rawson Avenue, which will be coming here in the next, to the east, Mike.
This way.
At Ballpark Drive in Rawson.
Where?
We got to go underneath Rawson Avenue yet. We'll do that when we do some off-site improvements. And then we're working on going underneath Rawson Avenue right now, and we got to connect to the water over by the car wash on 76 in Rawson.
Loomis.
You're right. Sorry. I should know that. And we're not that far from, we're about halfway underneath the road right now, and we're within a month of having that water connected. And then we'll have live water connected to three different existing spots throughout the development to different areas of the city to loop it through the way the city had asked. As far as the grading on the site, we're most of the grading is complete. We are looking at, by the end of May, having the Ballpark Drive connected and paved from Rawson Avenue at our main entrance back up to the existing roundabout through there, and that'll get done, we say, by the end of May. Then we'll work on the east half of the road there through the month of June, as well as the road south of Rawson. And give or take, 4th of July, we're planning on having the roads done and opened up at that point, after which we'll be back to you guys for the dedication portion that way. The parking lots north of Rawson, north of the big indoor complex, and then north of the stadium are graded out currently. We just need the Mother Nature to help out a little bit on the weather here, and we'll get those paved here as well by the end of May through that. And the other piece is the off-site improvements that we have to do. We have some turn lanes and a fully controlled intersection going in there on Ballpark Drive and Rawson. That work will start as soon as the frost is out of the ground in the roadway, hopefully here in the next couple weeks. And we've got turn lanes going both directions, signals going in that one. Then working to the east, we've got some turn lanes to add on 70, what Mike's pointing to now, we got another fully controlled intersection going in up there. Where Ballpark Drive comes back to 76. Then there's three other kind of, I'm going to say, turn lane extensions we have to do off of 76 and Rawson Avenue itself. And that'll all be done at the same time here in the, and looking at it completed, give or take, 4th of July.
I guess I heard a lot of questions about change orders. So I've been coming to council meetings for 19 years at that time. Shy of even half years off of that. I've been sitting up here and change orders have come to the council. I've heard upwards of 13 different change orders. How can you sum up what the residents are talking about change orders for us?
Well, any changes that we've had have been related to the plans and what we've needed to do. If we back up far enough, when we started this, we did not have approved plans yet. We had concept plans that we thought were very close to being complete, and the plans have evolved and changed through that as the different agencies have reviewed them and tweaks need to be made to those plans. So things have changed as we've gone through that end, and I guess that probably relate that to what change orders people are talking about.
Can we just give some industry, maybe you can talk about this notion of change orders. Change orders are pretty frequent. I don't think the common council wants to get in the business of change orders, but maybe I do think for people to understand the nature of change orders on this massive of a project is really important.
Well, let me just tell you my perspective on change
Please do.
Orders. We had a consultant sit before us who was bringing in change orders after the fact. And change orders that should have been brought before the council, and I remember telling that specific consultant that they were continuing to bring things after the fact and not let us know that I was not going to support them anymore. So I feel strongly that if there's going to be financial change orders that affect the city, that the council should be made aware of those change orders, regardless of if they're construction or tinted nature, we should all be informed about that. Now, it's my understanding there have been quite a few changes in the agency's construction of this. Now, we can't, you know, watch everything, of course, when we do try to ask too many questions, it's always been accused of micromanaging, but we have a lot of citizens that want to call it really.
Sure.
So, yeah, thank you.
Why? Certainly a project of this scale and this size would have change orders, and maybe the way to think of it is, because this term came up, a GMP contract, so that's a guaranteed maximum price contract. So as a developer, I tend to like to sign those contracts with my contractor, because essentially what it says is you're going to build me this project for this amount of money. However, any one of those contracts, and these are standard AIA forms that are promulgated by all the industry trade groups and accepted in the industry, there are certain carve-outs to that general or guaranteed maximum price. So, for example, unforeseen conditions is the classic one. So on any given project I do, it wouldn't be a surprise to me, whether it's 1 acre or 30 acres, frankly, to have a subcontractor or my general come to me with a subcontractor and say, hey, we opened up the dirt and I found, 3 foot of old building foundation on this site that we didn't find when we did a geotech analysis. So, you know, we do what we can on the front end to figure this stuff out, right? So on a project like this, we'll hire a geotech consultant, and they go out and they punch a ton of holes in the ground. I mean, they turn it into Swiss cheese as best you can, because you want to know what's under the ground when you go into it. Unfortunately, on a site, again, whether it's 1 acre or 30 acres, you just can't possibly poke enough holes in the ground to know exactly what you have. So you are always, as a developer, and I'll tell you, this is, if I was making a list of things that keep me awake at night, this is, makes the top five of my list as a developer. It's you do your best to understand the issues, but the honest truth is once you crack open the ground, you don't know what you've got. And you know, another piece of another carve-out is changes from plans. So I will tell you that on the apartment side, as I frame out a building and I start seeing the drywall go in and the framing of the units, it would not be uncommon for me to say, you know what, that looked good on paper, on a two-dimensional plan, but I think really to make the unit leasable, we need to tweak something here or there. And now I carry contingency in my budgets to, as I have in this one, and the staff can talk about that, and others can talk about it. But any of those changes that I might make, which ultimately I guess I feel like I'm improving the quality of the product, I'm making sure it fits that description of a legacy development, that would trigger a change order from a contractor. I would say it's a good change order, but a change order nonetheless.
I guess maybe you're misunderstanding my point. It's not how understanding what change orders are. It's letting you know that as all the person who's been sitting up there, I have not been made aware of much in line of what has been happening with the need for change orders, which could be affecting the cost. And I would like that, you know, if we're going to continue these presentations, that might be a really good thing, is to keep us updated. We all can understand what's going on in landfill and that these things can come up. But I certainly don't want to be left in the dark when things come up that might change your need for needing more funding or DNR requests or environmental impacts that might be increased because of this.
Sure. No, I mean, if that's something that you guys want me to report out on, I'll try to make it as crisp as possible. A lot of these change orders are $0 change orders too, Kristen. So what we'll do is we'll tap into contingency, or we'll, you know, we talk about some of these stuff that unforeseen circumstances, but there's also on this project then some really great findings where we save money. So what we'll do is we'll do a change order out of this bucket into this bucket. So a lot of what I'll report out on that is that, you know, left pocket, right pocket.
Thank you.
Sure.
Good. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I was just going to ask you if we could go out of order and take number 8 next.
Without objection, would the G8, a resolution opposing commitment restrictions for approval of a special use for two-family residential side-by-side located at 10504 West Cortez. Alderman Nelson.
Move for approval.
Second.
All those in favor? Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Alderman would like us to go to G3. Alderman Wilhelm. Well, let me announce this. This is a status update from the Quarry Monitoring Committee regarding the direction from the County Council.
Well, we're trying to track each of these items that the citizens brought forward, and I've been trying to keep on council action sheets from the meetings and steps along the way. So, as you can see, 1 through 6, those items have mostly been addressed. The status is short as possible to save time. That brings us down to the items 7 and 8. Items 9 and 10 were eliminated because it's just a little bit too much to put into one meeting with everything going on. So 7 and 8 were selected because the citizens felt they were the highest priorities. Under number 7, we have the Sandex survey, which were done in the past. There was a 2016 survey and a 2017 survey. There's, if you look on page 43 and 44, you'll see the different surveys. But then I'd also like to call your attention to page 60 and 61. 60 and 61 are, the handwriting is for me because I had presented this to the Quarry Monitoring Committee to try to make the verbiage of the Stantec reporting more clear. Because in 2016, they surveyed both sections, A and B, and they kind of talk about, you would think A would be on the north side, B would be on the south, so everyone kept kind of reporting the wrong portions, so I thought it was important to show you. So in 2016, if you look at the survey, the survey was done from the center line and also from the section line. And this is one of the things the citizens brought up. They want a measurement from a set location. The PDD says it's supposed to be from the center line of the road. So the surveys went out and they went to pavement and said this is the center line. That was about a foot off, give or take a few inches or so either way from the section line. So someone said, well, then the center line has changed over the years. So if we do go ahead with a further survey, we need to have a set location from where we're going to make this measurement from. Otherwise, we're just making measurements from two separate points. So that was one of the things that the city attorney he said that is a matter of an engineering question. There either has to be some type of...
You got the little girl.
There has to be some type of engineering documents. Otherwise, we should just be measuring from where the existing center line is. Unless someone can prove that the center line has moved since the PDD was put into place, then it just makes sense to just use the existing center line of road makers measurements. So in 2016, when you look at the A and B sections, A was blasted previously. And as you can see, the survey shows it's 6.8 feet over for where the top of the wall is. And that over is into the 650-foot setback. And then on B, in 2016, they have 9.61 feet over. But then they say it, you can see the note on there, it says field of loose gravel. So then in 2017, which is on page 60, you can see the same survey done from section line and center line where now they are clear of that. How do we end up being over into the buffer in 2016 and then
outside of the buffer in 2017. Well, the nearest you can tell from reading the write-up is the quarry